there was a theology professor who really wanted to make a point to his students about the difference between the material world and the world of spirit. And he was puzzled about how to show them about metaphysics. So one day he comes into his classroom and he takes the chair that is sitting behind his desk and he puts it right up front on the platform, just like this. And he turns to his students and he says, he writes on the blackboard, he says, "Prove to me in writing that this chair does not exist. Prove to me in writing that this chair does not exist." Now, most of the students immediately whip out their laptops, immediately go on Google, immediately begin to craft these long, detailed dissertations about why the chair doesn't really exist. But there was one student who sat in a chair, sat in her chair, and just kind of sat there and just meditated for a few moments. And she just sat for a moment or two, and she gets up, she writes down on her pad a couple of words, she brings it up to the teacher, she turns it in, and she leaves the room. That student got the only A because she asked a better question. What chair? See, that theology professor may as well have been a Unity minister. Or maybe the student became a Unity minister later. You see, Unity doesn't teach you what to think. It teaches you how to think. Helps you learn how to think. And it helps you ask better questions like the student in the opening story. This little story illustrates, I think, how easy it is to misperceive a situation and then to make choices based on that misperception. And we do it all the time. We make judgments based on what our five senses tell us. And then we take actions based on what often can be completely erroneous or at least incomplete information that we get from our five senses. Unity, though, gives us some tools for seeing things as they really are, not just what they seem to be through the five senses. And to me, that's the essence of the deeper part of the spiritual path called unity. And I found in my 15 years of ministry that the most intriguing tool unity offers is metaphysics. The idea that we can look at the material world, the physical world all around us, in an entirely different and new way. See, the material world wants us to view everything through our five senses. It tells us, for example, that what's on the evening news is very important and very real. But that's not the news. The news is that we all live in two worlds at the same time. The five-sense world, but also an invisible world, the world of spirit. The sad truth is that most people in this country think the five-sense world, the material world, is all there is. Take a look at the economic situation, for example. It would have us believe that the universe is based on lack, not abundance. But you see, that belief is based on a temporary appearance, not an eternal spiritual truth. That's the human part of us, relying on what we can see, hear, touch, taste, and feel. But I have a question for you about that. Why is it in the 90s and in the early part of this century, when the U.S. economy was just absolutely booming, why didn't we accept that as our reality instead of what we're accepting today? Instead, in the 90s, it seemed like, especially around 2000, as the 90s became the 2000s, around 2007, we began to wait for the other shoe to drop. Or we waited for the rainy day. And then when it happens, we said, see, I told you so. Not realizing that our attitude helped create a human experience of lack rather than abundance. And the excuse I hear for that kind of thinking is, oh, well, it's only human. And I respond, you're right, it is only human. How's that working out for you these days? Instead, let's meet the challenge of a human economy on a different level, a spiritual level. In the words of Eric Butterworth, who's Unity's clearest writer, I believe, we're not here to set things right. We're here to see them rightly. And in seeing things from a spiritual viewpoint rather than just a human perspective, we affect how things turn out. Don't we? The answer is yes. Does the phrase the law of attraction have any meaning to you today? Remember the teachings of The Secret. I'm sure you must have seen that when it came out a few years ago. See, one of Eric Butterworth's most powerful books, he's written a lot of them, but one of his most powerful, I think, is entitled Spiritual Economics, right here. The bookstore has copies. I invite you if you don't have this book, it's been around a long, long time. If you don't have it, go get it. And when you read it, you'll find these words, among many others, but these for sure. In recent years, the news, and he's referring to television news, has become the number one entertainment form. The problem is, when it comes to economic reports, because we are accustomed to being manipulated by what we see on TV, they become self-fulfilling prophecies. Eric goes on, just keep in mind that what you are seeing is the appearance of things. You have the right, he says, even the responsibility to put your own stamp of God consciousness upon everything you see and hear. If you are manipulated by the news, then you become part of the world's problems. But if you look out the window of truth and project a fountain of love and light, then you are part of the solution. Now, I think the media, especially television, hardly ever see things rightly. They want to blame and shame and sensationalize and yell and point fingers. You've seen all that. And the louder, the better. Here's my definition of a journalist. Someone with nothing to say and the power to say it repeatedly. I'm eminently qualified to criticize the media because I once made quite a nice living in it. Before becoming a Unity minister, I spent almost 30 years in the newspaper business, including schooling, but almost 30 years. And back in 1987, when Nancy and I were living on Maui, I know it's a tough job, but somebody has to do it. I found Unity, and I was astonished by what I had been missing all those years. I was about 40-some years old then, and I was amazed that I had spent 40-plus years not even realizing that a spiritual world was existing out there. I realized that I had spent my entire life in the human world, and why not? I was a newspaper guy. And I had no time at all in the spiritual world because I didn't even know it existed. My time on Maui helped me get in touch with the spiritual world because Maui became a sacred place for me. And many Hawaiian people that I've met out there live lives based on ancient spiritual principles. The principle is called the Huna, an inner spirituality of peace and harmony still practiced by many Hawaiians today. But it's very ancient, very old. I was so taken with that spiritual practice that I wrote a novel about it. My novel is called House of the Sun, and it'll be available soon. I'll let you know for sure. And when I discovered the world of spirit, I became fascinated by a new way of thinking, tuning into an entirely different dimension that is unfolding every moment that we never are aware of if we stay only in the human world. See, my first career in newspapers was based on seeking the facts. My second career in ministry is devoted to seeking the truth. They are very different. And the truth is, what you see on television, hear on radio, and read in newspapers and magazines is not the news. Here's the news. The five-sense material world and the world of spirit represent two ends of an energy scale, I believe. Quantum physicists tell us that everything that exists in this universe is a form of energy, one way or the other. Some of it's matter, some of it's energy, only energy, but matter becomes energy, and they kind of intertwine. Therefore, if everything is a form of energy, we are energy forms. We're unique energy forms in that we think and that we know that we think. But we're energy, and all energy is moving or vibrating. So are we. When we vibrate at a lower frequency, we exist primarily in the material world, the human part of us. But when we vibrate at a higher frequency, we begin to exist in the spiritual world. And now, more news. Our thinking regulates our vibratory level. How we think regulates how we vibrate. In Unity, we talk about consciousness all the time. Unity teachings help us lift our consciousness by thinking on a higher plane. And then we find ourselves in a different world when we do that, when we can reach that point. A world governed by spirit, not by senses. My question for you today is, would you like to spend more time in that world? Or are you content with just the human world? I think I know the answer. I'm not looking for hands. See, in the human experience, our thinking is usually based on the material world around us. And that seems to make sense to us because that is the world that we experience, that surrounds us in everybody we meet, every place we go. It's there in front of us. Our senses tell us that. And indeed, there are physical laws that we must obey to make it through the human experience. For example, I once saw a bumper sticker that said, "Gravity, not just a good idea, it's the law." And the point is this. Yes, we live in two worlds, and we need to pay attention to the five-sense world. No question about that. And here's more news. The other world, the world of spirit, it certainly is important. More so in many aspects, and we need to learn how to live there too. To me, that idea is the essence of the book that I just showed you a moment ago, Spiritual Economics, and I'll get back to it in a minute. But first, I want to talk about judgment. See, the story that I used to open this talk showed how people can make big mistakes based on erroneous thinking and erroneous judgment about things. Most of those students took that teacher at his word. But the other one, the gal, used her own thinking to come to a different conclusion. And I consider judgment the most pressing problem that we Americans have in this country. I call judgment spiritual malpractice. It's so damaging. If you don't believe me, just look once more at the media. So-called commentators spend most of their time ridiculing each other and everyone else in a very loud voice. Americans seem to be captivated by the misfortunes of celebrities. Does the words Lindsay Lohan mean anything to you? Radical right religious leaders pound us with assurances of hellfire and damnation if we don't agree with them. See, judgment is easy because it requires no careful thought or considerate persuasion. People just assume that anyone who does not agree with them is an absolute idiot. The trouble is that attitude accomplishes nothing positive. It does nothing to lead to solutions. All it does is produce more conflict in this country. You're seeing the fruits of that all the time now. And Jesus, the master teacher, had an interesting take on judgment. He said in Matthew, "Do not judge so that you may not be judged." Tsang Chan, a 3rd century Zen master, said it a slightly different way, and I really like this one. "Do not search for the truth. Just stop having opinions." And a more modern way of saying what Jesus said is, what goes around comes around. All spiritual teachers advise us to take a good long look at ourselves before we criticize other people. I think the reason we judge people is because we fear that what we see in them exists within ourselves. When we honestly assess our own lives, we often find that in us the traits that we dislike in others. And that makes us so uncomfortable that we lash out in judgment about them, when really it's all about us, what we found inside us, ourselves. Back to spiritual economics. Listen to this fascinating idea from Eric Butterworth and notice how it applies to today's economic situation. Politicians are known to view with alarm the condition of the economy, he writes. Economic forecasters may predict chaos in the marketplace. Yeah, they might. However, you have a choice. You can decide where you are going to throw the weight of your consciousness. And the welfare of the nation as a whole is determined by we, the people. More and more economists are coming to agree that this word economy does not refer to a monolithic entity, but rather to a financial climate, chiefly influenced, and I love this because he's right on the money here, chiefly influenced by the collective consciousness of the populace. So the bankers aren't doing the economy, we're doing the economy. Said another way, Eric is telling us that how we look at something has a powerful influence on how it turns out. His underlying message in this book, I think, is for us to choose to spend more time in the spiritual realm rather than in the material world. See, the spiritual part of us is a place where we are in touch with God's guidance and we are willing to trust it. It's a place where we can say, "Tell me more," when somebody criticizes us. It's the place where we can see that when people blame or criticize, there is something missing for them. It's the place where, with a gentle word or a look, we communicate rather than separate. It's the place where we are open to all possibilities, rather than deciding that we're right and everybody else is wrong. It's the place where we can live happily in both worlds, the spiritual realm and the human realm, with maturity and compassion. Having said all that, I want to close today with a story that I think will help you remember the importance of choosing which world you want to spend more time in. The only survivor of a shipwreck was marooned on a desert island. It was uninhabited. He was the only one there. It was relatively small. And for days he prayed feverishly for God to rescue him, to come and save him. And he constantly scanned the horizon for the ship that he just knew was coming because he'd asked God for it. But no ship arrived. What did arrive was really bad weather. Driving rain, high wind, a little hail. And he just suffered greatly in this bad weather. And so he decided to build something to protect him from the elements. So he spent days on the little island collecting driftwood, piece by piece, little pieces, big pieces, and finally had enough to put together a very small little hut that he could just barely climb into at night so he could be protected from the elements. One day, though, he was hungry and he had to go out on the island and look for food, and it took him to the other side of the island. And when he came back, he saw with great terror that his little hut had caught on fire and the smoke was boiling up into the sky. And what little he had managed to acquire was lost. And he said, "God, how could you do this to me?" Early the next morning, though, he was awakened by the sound of a ship approaching the island. It had come to rescue him. He asked the captain, "How did you know I was here?" The captain said, "We saw your smoke signal." Because of that experience, the castaway learned an important lesson about judgment. The fire that destroyed his little hut was for him, not against him. What he thought was bad news was actually his salvation. We too face that same kind of situation with today's economy. Like the castaway, we can blame God and the universe and everybody else for not setting things right. Or we can calmly see that the economic inferno is just a signal from God that God is on the scene and all is well. And that's today's news. Thank you. God bless you.